I'm here with director Rob Weiner of Farmers Alley Theater and members of the cast of The Toxic Avenger, which opens this week and continues through February 19th. This season really has been a buzzy season, lots going on, and you've really seemed to capture a lot of the, was it gestalt or the feeling of what's going on with a lot of people.
Well, it's really interesting considering that the musical that we're putting on right now, Toxic Avenger, which I'll talk about in just a second, has some themes similar to some shows that we've already done this year. You know, we opened this year with 1776, which was, you know, right in the middle of all the election craziness. And it was a big, big success for us. A lot of people were really excited about seeing that show. It hadn't been produced in the area in a long time. I think a lot of people came out for that for those reasons. Then we followed that up with the Pulitzer Prize winning drama Disgraced, which, if you can believe it, it's even become more timely in the last even couple weeks as it dealt with Islamophobia. And we actually ran that show right in the middle of when the election was going on in November. We had our opening weekend before the election and then our second weekend after the election. So that was really interesting. We had some really cool talkbacks after those shows as well. But after those two sort of political shows, we did Million Dollar Quartet in December, which was just a good time, you know, rock and roll, Elvis, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lewis, and just smashed all of our box office records, attendance numbers, and being over at the little theater on Oakland Drive with a bigger house than we're used to downtown at Farmers Alley was also very helpful in that. But just a real, real home run, and we were obviously super, super pleased with that. But what's exciting about The Toxic Avenger, which opens here in February for us, is it's a regional premiere. I don't believe anyone else in Michigan has done it. It just became available for the rights to for theaters to produce it. And we've wanted to do this show for such a long time. The off-Broadway cast recording came out like 2009, which is around the time when Farmers Alley was founded. And we've been wanting to do it for so long, or it was off Broadway, then it closed, and it was sort of in limbo for a while. And a new production of it was mounted in Texas back in like 2011 or 12. And then that closed, and we're still waiting for it, waiting for it. Finally became released, and we jumped all over it. The score is so great. The script is so funny. It reminded us a lot of some of our previous musical comedies that we've done, like the Trailer Park musicals, which were a big success for us. Something smart and funny like You're in Town, which was really sort of making fun of musical theater tropes and had that really smart, witty edge to it. And then something as broad as Spamalot that we did this past summer. But what's funny about The Toxic Avenger, and it's as I'm watching us rehearse every night and lead up to opening, there are a lot of insights and sort of political messages that are similar to what's going on today. If you don't know, The Toxic Avenger, the musical, is based on a cult classic movie from the 80s from a film studio called Troma Entertainment, which was famous for making schlocky, horrible, campy, violent movies.
Global warming is upon us. The earth is in crisis. It is a time in need of heroes.
Like sort of bad movie night, but like on purpose. So these movies, you'd get around with your friends, you'd have a drink or something else, and watch these movies and just enjoy them for the pure sort of pulpiness of them. And which might seem like a weird object for a Broadway musical. But what the creators of the musical did was very smart. They took sort of the outline of the movie and transformed it, made it a little more accessible to general audiences. And it's a story about a nerd, Melvin Ferd III, who is an aspiring earth scientist who discovers that his town is being run by the villainous mayor who has allowed toxic waste to infest their lovely town of Tromaville. And on his way to sort of get rid of all the pollution and the evildoers, he gets thrown into one of these vats of toxic waste and turns into the green and gruesome Toxic Avenger.
He's the legend of the Toxic Avenger.
It's funny, he's very ugly, his eyeball is drooping, I mean, the makeup that we've got for the show is incredible. But going back to the message, he has this whole long speech about going to your politicians and corporate executives, taking political action to stand up and to make sure that you go to your civic leaders with love and with compassion, but making sure that you resist something like this happening. Every night we're like, how is something like the Toxic Avenger somehow timely to things that are somehow happening in the world today? But besides being campy and cartoony and funny, it does have that message of environmentalism, does have a heart to it. There's a love story between the ugly Toxic Avenger and his love interest, Sarah, the blind librarian. There's a lot of things to take away from the show, and I know that audiences, if they come and see it, even if they're not familiar with the schlocky 80s movie, are going to really enjoy themselves.
But don't worry.
I swear I'll save New Jersey, but how I do not know. We need new air in Jersey and cleaner H2O.
The writer of the music is David Bryan, who is the keyboardist for a very famous band from New Jersey, who's had hits in the 80s like Living on a Prayer, You Give Love a Bad Name, you know, Bad Medicine, stuff like that. So I think the audience knows what we're talking about if they're at all familiar with a New Jersey rock band. It's not Bruce Springsteen. So he and his writing partner, Joe DePietro, also is a New Jersey native as well. So it's a lot of the songs, and I'm sure that my actors alongside me would tell you, are kind of almost homages to some famous 80s songs. Within the, you hear a riff or you hear like a line, and sometimes even the lyrics sample some of his band's older work as well. So it's got a driving rock score. So coming off of Million Dollar Quartet, where we had that 50s rock and roll, here we've got the 80s rock and roll, and it's a really great, the Little Theater is a great venue for that sound equipment, and we've got a tremendous band led by our music director, Lori Hatfield, who crushes it every night.
Well, let's meet the cast. Here in the studio, we have Jared Byron Green, who plays the Toxic Avenger, otherwise known as Melvin Ferd III. Did you grow up in New Jersey by any chance?
I did not. I grew up in Western Massachusetts, Amherst to be exact. So like the big five college town area, right next to UMass and Hampshire College.
I would think there'd be a lot of opportunity to be on stages around there.
Yeah, it is. The area I grew up in was very, they embraced the arts very much so. I started acting around 3 years old. My parents put me in this camp that was probably like the best idea I can think of for this this couple. They brought in all these kids for about a couple of weeks. They could choose whatever character that they wanted to be, and they would write a musical for those kids to be in as those characters. And that, this kind of changed my life. It like expanded my imagination. And ever since that point, I've always been interested and invested myself in the arts as much as I could.
What is it about being a music theater performer that might surprise someone who doesn't know the world or the discipline?
It's a tough business to keep busy in, taking classes, coaching with people, going to as many auditions as you can. You have to be very disciplined in terms of how you take care of yourself, your diet, your sleep schedule. It asks a lot from you and your body. It's tough, you know?
It's multi-disciplines. It's voice, it's movement, and what else? Dance?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call myself a dancer, but I'm an advanced mover is what I call myself. I enjoy the art of dance, but I'm mainly a singer-actor. But yeah, even if you're not such a heavy dancer, even like kudos to the dancers because their jobs are even more difficult, I think. It's whatever way you can also to relax your body and your mind before going into shows or even auditions. That's the best way to navigate the world, I think.
You played the role of Tony in a national tour of West Side Story. That tells me a lot without even having met you before. You know, winning a role of that kind is requires a very special performer. And it says you've got a set of pipes on you that must be pretty special.
That experience was unbelievably amazing in every which way. That was probably my favorite musical of all time, too. My music teacher in elementary school introduced us at a very young age to that movie, and I just became obsessed. And I guess that's when my love for music and theater combined really came into my life. And that show and that role, that was just like a dream come true at the time.
What are some other highlights in your music theater performance career?
Well, I just got my Equity card like a few months back from doing a production of The Who's Tommy as Tommy. Now I'm just in love with it in that show and that role very much, and it taught me a lot as a performer.
Let's talk about your character a little more and what you bring to it. I can't help but think it would be difficult, even if you're a successful performer as you are, to write home and say, "Hi, Mom, I'm now the lead in The Toxic Avenger."
You're saying it doesn't hold the same cachet as Tony in West Side Story?
Or, you know, Hamlet in Hamlet or something like
right.
that.
Right. Yeah. My mother was a little bit surprised at first, since she's used to me playing sort of those straight-laced leading man roles like Tony. But I was familiar with the show for a while, too, before auditioning for it, and I don't know, there was something very interesting about playing that Melvin character and then getting into that suit and that mask and that like toxic mindset that was very interesting that I really was like so like willing to try.
Do you play a love story as well in this?
Yes. Oh, yes. A lot of his actions actually, you know, are dictated by this love he has for this girl, Sarah, the blind librarian. So he has this need to, you know, remove the pollution, protect the town, and make sure Sarah is safe from all that as well.
Sounds like a hero to me.
He tries.
Supporting the story, supporting so much, is a man of many faces, I should say many roles, Deontay Goodman.
So I play the role of, my role is called Black Dude, which means I play about 12 to 13 different characters, from Professor Ken, all the way to an old lady, a girl named Shaniqua, a hooker. I play my role as well as the white dude who also plays several characters. I guess I would sort of just say that we're in some ways the comic relief if there is a need for comic relief in this show. It's just so funny. And anytime I go off stage, I'm changing into something else. It gets to be pretty hectic, but it's also a lot of fun, and it keeps the energy, you know, just high, and it's never boring. So,
what was it like to audition for Farmer's Alley?
It was different for me, just because I'm not used to playing comedic roles and things like that. That's not really it's all very new for me, and you know, it was definitely a learning experience for me, because I remember Rob and Jeremy and them asking me to, come up with a monologue that, you know, just like showed a few different characters and different comedic beats. And, you know, I remember talking to my friend. I'm like, I don't know how to do this. What am I going to do? This is going to be so bad. But it was a great learning experience for me to, you know, just like get out of my box. And I mean, it landed me the job, and it was, you know, it's ever since then, it's been a really great experience. I've really enjoyed working with these people, and it's been great.
What amazes me about actors, performers, is this mental toughness that it takes to audition, try things that you're really uncomfortable doing or have never done before. But then that doesn't close you down. You stay emotionally accessible in order to be good at what you do.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's a balancing act that few can accomplish.
Well, and it's for me personally, it's definitely not something that I myself can keep control over. It's definitely, you know, like having a good support system around you, some friends to tell you, you know, you just, I mean, the worst thing that they can say to you is no. The worst thing that can happen is that you don't have the job that you already don't have. So it's, you know, the least that you can do is just put yourself out there and, you know, see what happens. And if nothing else, you know, you're learning something, you're trying something new. And then in those really great instances, it gets you a job. So
will you be singing as well?
I will be singing a lot. that in itself is also pretty difficult, having to, you know, sing in different voices. And this show definitely uses a large chunk of range, and, you know, for all of us. And it's definitely a workout. It's a workout.
Rob, tell me about casting Deontay Goodman.
What was really important to me when we were searching for black dude, I laugh every time, black dude and white dude, was that they had that rock and roll singing and had this this range that Deontay talked about. And when we heard him sing, we knew we had found our guy. And the comedic stuff that he was very, you know, maybe trepidatious about was not a horrible, you know, anything by that stretch of imagination. It was good. And I knew that pulling, you know, we could find all the comedic beats out of it. And I agree with what Deontay said, because the costumers and makeup team and the set and everything combined really does make the comedy work to a different level. And when we put all the costumes on, it really just took it from, you know, good to great. And I think everyone worked out that. And it's kind of kismet that we found Deontay, because we were suggested him by our costume designer, who had worked with him before, I believe in West Virginia or North Carolina or somewhere like that. And she said, I've got this, you know, guy, if we're looking for somebody, let me get in touch with him. And she did, and he sent us the video, and the rest is going to be theatrical history.
Toxic Avenger opens at Farmer's Alley Theater at the Little Theater on Oakland Drive and continues through February 19th.
February 19th, yeah.
Quick follow-up. Who did you cast as White Dude?
White Dude is portrayed by a local Kalamazoo theatrical favorite, Greg Laux, who has been in a number of productions of Farmer's Alley. Both he and I did a production over at the Kalamazoo Civic, where we played best friends in the musical version of The Full Monty. So I know Greg very well after that show. No, he's hilarious, and the stuff that he comes up with and the chemistry that him and Deontay have on stage is really something else.
Why is evil so hard? Evil.
Finally, last but not least, there is a plum role for a villain in the show, and it's played by a woman, Jessica Medoff. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
You have background in music theater and opera?
I do. I grew up in the theater. My father is a playwright and a theater educator, so from a very young age, I spent a lot of time backstage and in plays. I was the token kid whenever they needed a child at the university in the theater department. So I grew up in the theater and knew that there was really nothing else that I wanted to do with my life. And my father told me at a young age, if there's anything else you can do, please do, because this is going to be a tough road. And I said, well, there's nothing else I can do, so this is what I'm going to do. And I've had my parents' support from the beginning, which has been a real blessing. As a young singer, I kind of had a vibrato and a little bit more heft in my voice than the other, you know, freshmen in the choir. And so I started taking voice lessons and discovered that I had a knack for opera. So I got both my undergraduate degree and my master's degree from the University of Michigan. And I received my master's degree in vocal performance and specialized in opera, and then moved to New York City and continued my studies with a professor at Juilliard and did the opera thing for a number of years and really thought that that was where I was meant to be, all the while knowing in my heart that I really would much rather be doing musical theater. Opera is an incredibly difficult art form. Not that musical theater isn't, but it came to a point in my life where I needed to be the best at something. And I wasn't the best at opera. There was a lot of people that were a little bit better than me. And at the point that I was, as a professional grown adult in New York City, I didn't love it enough to become the best. And luckily, the world of musical theater opened up to me at an adult age, which is sort of rare to get into the musical theater world. I'm 38 years old, so to be getting into the musical theater world in the middle of your 30s is probably kind of unique. It's not the normal route. So I've just been very lucky that I've fallen into what I really love more than anything, and it's a great place to be for me. I'm very, very happy.
That's a fascinating story. We were talking about mental toughness earlier. Mm. Another element of that is that brutal self-examination mm-hmm. that every performer goes through periodically, I think.
Yeah.
And again, some of the rest of us schlubs don't really want to look in that mirror.
Right. Well, I was told by my agent, who's also a dear friend of mine, she and her father run the company. And so there's this sort of father figure and then this sort of friend figure in the two of them. And they said to me a few years ago, they said, okay, there's 20 people on our roster. You have to be the best at something on this roster. What are you the best at of all these people? And it was incredibly hurtful at the time. Like, oh, how dare you suggest that I'm not the best at something? But that's the fact. And so rather than complaining about it and trying to fit myself into a box that I didn't fit in, like a circle in a square, I decided to find out what it exactly was that I was the best at. And I'm not saying I'm the best in the world, but for me, my personal best comes in the form of musical theater and comedy and acting and opera, American opera, new opera.
I love that these days the two worlds are coming closer and closer together. We have Sondheim being performed by opera companies.
Yeah, well, that's really the niche that I'm in, which I'm, again, very lucky that my goal essentially is to become the opera house's musical theater star.
There you go. All right, well, let's hear about the villain, this mayor.
Honestly, I've never played the villain before, particularly in opera as a soprano. You never get to play the villain. I mean, you're like the love interest, which is fun too, but you're like, kind of boring. When like Rob said, they posted on an audition website, and I came across it, and I'd never heard of the Toxic Avenger. I'd never heard of the movie, certainly. And so I kind of looked it up a little bit, and I looked at what the audition material that they were asking to hear was, and the two titles of the songs that I was asked to tape for them was Evil is Hot and Bitch, Slut, Liar, Whore. Can I say that? I mean, that's just the title of the song. I'm just saying it. And I thought, oh, damn, I got to audition for this. Just the songs could be terrible. But if I get to sing Bitch on pitch, that's just like might be the pinnacle of my career, and I can just stop now. So I auditioned. I did the singing. My husband is a pianist. I'm very lucky to have a pianist on hand. And so we set up our little tape. You know, we do self-tapes for musical theater, and you uploaded onto the internet. And so we set up our little situation while my two-year-old was napping, and he played the piano in our living room, and I sang these songs and honed my best rock star, which is a new thing for me, and sent it in. And then I got another, they responded to that submission, and then they asked me to do some lines. And at this point we have a home in Missouri and in New York. And so at this time, I'm alone. I'm in our apartment in New York City. And it's right around election time. And I'm setting up my self-tape situation in my New York apartment. And it's late at night. And I'm a little slap happy. And I'm recording myself doing this dialogue with myself because I didn't have anybody else there. So I recorded what became Jared's lines. And then I just acted with myself in my iPhone. And I started cracking myself up doing these ad-libs and just saying the lines and trying different takes and trying more New Jersey, less New Jersey. And I was just like, oh, my God, I have to get cast in this just because I'm having so much fun and I'm by myself right now. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
I remember those tapes, and say what you will about the slap happiness, but that ad-libbing and that comedic creativity that she showed in those videos was probably one of the deciding factors in going with Jessica. And it has carried over to the rehearsal process because she'll throw in stuff there. You know, I want to give this is the type of show where it's not Hamlet. So we don't have to we have the ability where there's, you know, opportunities for ad-libs or throw-ins or stuff like that. And you give that to Jessica and she will just go with it. So it certainly is something that she has a natural gift for.
Tell me more about how this character powers the story.
Well, she is the problem, basically. And every good story has a good problem. So she is the mayor. Mayor Belgoody, ironically, is her name. And she is storing toxic waste for these business people, and they pay her lots of money. So some shady politician stuff going on. It is her doing that essentially has Melvin Ferd III obliterated, she thinks. But then he comes back as a folk hero, as the mayor says. Oh, you're just trying to become a folk hero by killing people. I get it. But I also play Melvin's mother, Eunice Ferd. So it's a real treat to play the bad person and then to also play a loving character of sorts. And I also play a nun very briefly, a nun that says cuss words. That's my first character. That's how I open the show.
Speaking of cuss words, Rob, just what should people be prepared for?
I mean, I tell you, this show is like nothing I think that our audiences have seen, and maybe Kalamazoo audiences. The stuff that we do nightly on that stage, you still sort of have to pinch yourself. Are we really ripping that guy's arm off? Are we really singing the song that Jessica talked about earlier? What's amazing about that song, she's mentioned she plays the mayor and she plays Toxie's mother. She has a scene with herself. She goes off. She changes costume, comes back on as somebody else. She goes off, comes back as the different character. And she does that probably half a dozen times. And then our amazing costume director, Nicole Peckins, has created this half and half costume that goes right down the middle like Two-Face from Batman. And half of her is the mayor and half of her is the mom. And I tell you, it's the closer of Act One and it's going to bring the house down every night. And the final visual of her in this 50-50 costume is worth the price of admission alone. So, but as far as the show is concerned, I mean, yes, it is rated R, but it is not rated R in a mean-spirited way at all. I mean, all the language that we use, all the violence that occurs, some of the sexual situations that occur during the show are all played for laughs. So I think the audiences really get a kick out of it because it's not something maybe that they'd say in their own personal lives or anything like that. But when they see people doing it on stage, it gives them that release. And I think that's why those trailer park shows were so popular. And I think that's why this one will be a success as well.
It seems to me, just knowing you over the last few years, that one of the things Farmers Alley Theater set out to do as a smaller, more adult theater is show that it's almost important that theater not be polite.
I mean, definitely. I mean, when we construct a season, there are certain shows in there that are going to appeal to the mass audiences. You know, something like a Million Dollar Quartet or a Forever Plaid, something like that, that everybody can come to and enjoy. And then we have some more important, you know, shows that really challenge audiences, like A Disgraced or like Other Desert Cities or The Whipping Man, something like that. And then we also have these opportunities to do these comedies or other musicals that are smaller casts that maybe the bigger, you know, community theaters wouldn't do or have, you know, some subject material that they wouldn't do. And those are the shows that interest me the most. Shows like Toxic Avenger, shows like Title of Show. Or Next to Normal, you know, for dramatic purposes. So we want to balance our schedule, and it really is a puzzle putting those pieces together. But I think it works out, and hopefully audiences trust us enough that we put out a product good enough that they'll come and see us, whatever we do, drama, comedy, musical, play, and say, well, we know at Farmer's Alley we're going to get a good night of entertainment, and leaves us, you know, thinking about it and talking about the show. And art that starts conversations, whether they're important political conversations or whether they're conversations about how funny that scene was, they're both important.
And I feel like right now with the climate of our country, whether you're, you know, happy about the state of our world or not, you go and you sit in this audience with everybody, and I don't think you can think about anything else but what's going on stage, because it's so funny and so remarkable, and you can't help but smile. You can't help but laugh, and you can't help but just be with the people in the room enjoying a shared experience, and you're given permission to think horrible things are hilarious and just kind of let go for a minute and let your mind go and just be in the moment of theater. And it's not highbrow theater. It's not like you're getting like an emotional overhaul. You're just sitting there and just being lost in humor for a while. And I think as an actor, it's a real gift to get to come every night and be with people you adore and just laugh. Just laugh all night long. It's very healing.
I've always been, you know, told, and I truly believe that when it comes to theater, you know, it's like safety first, you know, the integrity of the theater second, and then other people's feelings last, you know. At the end of the day, you know, we have to, as artists, you know, we have to feed our passion and, you know, like what it is the story that we want to tell. And you know, the audience, we love for the audience to come and experience and just, like, you know, sort of forget their personal problems and everything that's at home. And, you know, granted, once you walk out of that theater, you know, the problems are still going to be there. The problems of the world are still going to be there. However, for, you know, a couple of hours, you can just, you know, let it all go and just relax and not really worry about whether or not you laughing at a horrible joke is morally sound, or, you know, whether, you know, you can just forget about all the standards that are set on us as human beings by society, and just, you know, allow yourself to be a person, whatever kind of person you choose to be at that time, you know. And it's really liberating as an actor and as an audience member who has gone to see theater.
Deontay said that beautifully. Having that sense of community, that connection between you and an audience, whether it be like a show like this where you get a good laugh, forget your troubles and your woes and keeping that outside the door, or just any kind of theater that you can connect to on a personal level that moves you, like gives you like some kind of cathartic release in a way. That's both like a shared experience as a whole community in that theater. And there's just that special sense of that connection as a whole, as a group, has always been like my driving force with the theater. And I think that even a show like this, you can even get a little bit out of that, because there is that heart there, there is that like relevant message. This is the superhero that we need right now. He's New Jersey's only superhero, but this is the time for Melvin Ferd III / Toxie to rise.